Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the gang, you know, the one you never asked to be a part of. You are listening to the Grief Gang podcast with me, your host, Amber Jeffrey. This podcast has been created to tackle the tough but important conversations around grief with authenticity, realness, and having a laugh whilst we're at it. Look, we're all going to experience grief at some point in our life, in some way or another. So it's good to talk about it, so that it's not much of a nightmare when it comes knocking at our doors. Grief can be incredibly lonely and isolating, but you don't have to feel lonely alone. On this podcast, you will hear various different stories and experiences, ones that will uplift you, inspire you, break your heart, mend your heart, and get you asking yourself some big questions. Some of these stories are my own, some are from the wonderful growing Grief Gang community, and some are from the incredible guest interviews. You will most likely cry. I hope somewhere along the line you can get a giggle in, but I promise you, you will learn something. I haven't got a clue what you'll take away, but I know you will take away something. So this might be weird to say given the context, but happy listening. So, Julie, well, one, thank you so much for joining me here today on the Grief Gang podcast. I have been a longtime admirer of you, your work, the way you deliver and the way you talk online. And I distinctively remember like when I found you and was like just blown away and taken away just by how much you were educating me. And I really thought I knew already quite a fair bit about death and dying. I was like, oh no, I know sweet fuck all. Like, I know nothing. So Julie, can you just tell the Grief Gang listeners who you are and what is it that you do?
So yes, hi, I'm Julie. Julie McFadden is my full name. On social media, I go by Hospice Nurse Julie, and I'm a palliative and hospice care nurse who has, you know, I just started social media probably a year and a half ago, just educating about death and dying and what hospice is, what palliative care is, what death looks like. I mean, all things death and dying. And it's taken on a life of its own, which is like really exciting because I wasn't sure if people would be into it. Because, you know, in my day-to-day life, people are not necessarily into talking to me about what I do on a daily basis. So it's been really cool to see like a group of, you know, people coming together and wanting to learn and know and meeting people like you who are also doing the same thing. It's amazing.
It is. It's a whole, I feel like the whole space in itself has just taken on a whole different trajectory of itself. And it's so interesting you say there of, you know, how in your day-to-day life and in your work that people don't really enjoy talking about it. And so it is nice to have these places to turn to. And I'll get into more, and I just love to know, yeah, more of the origin story of that. But I want to know a bit of how and why did you get into this line of work, Julie? What made you, and how old were you when you started into hospice and palliative care work?
I'm 40 now. I think I was probably 32-ish. I don't know exactly, but around like my early 30s. But I've been a nurse since my mid-20s. So I've been a nurse for about 15 years, and I was an ICU nurse for many years. And I never once thought about hospice in the beginning of my nursing career. I had a whole different view of what I thought I was going to do or what I thought I liked. And, you know, it was really hard for me at first because as an ICU nurse, it was like I purposely got this big, I felt like this big deal job at this amazing, you know, the number one hospital in the country in the ICU. Like it was amazing, an amazing experience. I learned so much. But after a couple years of that, my opinion of what I was doing really changed. I was like, I'm so unhappy. I can't do this. I feel like we're doing a disservice, not to everybody, but to a lot of people in the ICU. We weren't talking about the truth, which was this person's going to die. And if we know that for fact, which I think, I know everyone can say, you never know, you never know. Yes.
Yeah.
And we kind of do know at least a little bit, you know, like this person's likely not going to survive. So if they're likely not going to survive, why are we not saying this? And so the person and the family can choose how this person dies, right? Do they die in the hospital? Do they die at home? And I just felt like we were doing a disservice to so many people. So because of that, that started me thinking about there has to be a different way to do this. Like, I'm so unhappy here. There has to be a different way, which led me down this like long, windy path to eventually going into being a hospice nurse. And and it was a huge learning curve there too. Probably a good year or so before I was like, holy shit, this is amazing. This is amazing. Like, our bodies are truly amazing. It's not depressing. Of course, it's sad. Like, I can empathize and sympathize with people losing their loved ones. Yeah. But I just know the other end of it, right? The other end is like they still die, but they're dying in a hospital bed hooked to a bunch of machines. It's like, you know, so that's what got me into being a hospice nurse.
Yeah, I find that so really refreshing to hear as somebody who lost, well, my mum died and she was in intensive care and it was so very quick. Within 24 hours, she was in cardiac arrest and died. And to hear that though from a previous intensive care unit nurse, and kind of it's making me think about the nurses who were looking at my mum's bedside and kind of thinking, because we did have a little bit of the... We weren't being told the whole story, but could definitely tell there was some mollycoddling going on here. And me being who I am, I was like, I can just see through your bullshit, doctor. Like, I can see it. She's going to die. Just tell me. And it was when the doctor in one of our meetings was, I've said this before in the podcast of, you know, miracles can happen. And I was like, oh my God, just say she's going to die. Just say it.
Oh gosh, yeah, that really makes, it gives me like the chills. Yeah, because I really don't think people are, I don't think people are purposely trying to do that to us. I just think everyone, including healthcare workers, are so uncomfortable saying something like that when that's all I think people need to hear. Is like the truth so interesting. I'm sorry that happened to you. I'm glad you're someone who can kind of, I'm sure it wasn't purposely done, right? Well, I don't know, but in general, it's like
now and give grace and be like, of course, this man is looking and just looking at me being a 19-year-old young girl and my brother and being like, oh my God, how do I tell these two kids that their mum is literally, she's got very little chance of surviving. And but that's really interesting to hear that too. I even, for me, even the word before, I think, before when I started doing the work that I do and integrating myself into the work and with the people who work in this space, the word hospice used to scare me. And for a long while, and the word palliative care did as well. It very much, to me, was just really daunting and was like a hard bookend of this is it, this is the end. And kind of as soon as they go into hospice, that's it. They're dying then and there. And it's just, to me, it felt like throwing in the towel. And that was before. And I think that was kind of my, I don't know, we didn't even have time to even think about with my mum with a hospice scenario. But I know and have unlearned a lot of that over the years and through conversations with people like yourself in the space. And through conversations as well, I had a podcast recording with a lady called Dr. Catherine Mannix like last year. She's written some fantastic books here in the UK. She's incredible. And we kind of spoke about off mic about how the word and the meaning of hospice has been misconstrued so much over the years. And I just kind of wanted to get your take on that, of kind of how, especially in the US, because I know like hospice in US and UK is quite different and kind of, I don't know if I'm speaking out of term here, is hospice like a relatively, not relatively new, like in the past couple of years, but quite a new thing to the US? I know hospice in the UK has kind of been potentially a bit longer. Is that right to say?
I actually don't know when hospice in the UK started, but here it was around the 80s, 1980s. Okay.
So, I think we have been hit. Yeah, I think when I was speaking with Catherine, it was not too far from that, but it's still a relatively, new concept, would you say?
To me, I always say, like, we need to change the way we look at death and dying, not just with hospice. Like I feel like it needs to start from, like, birth. I think we need to all kind of really reframe how we look at death because it's inevitable. That's it, at least for right now. Who knows, right? But like right now it is. And so I think if we start kind of changing this view of like, we should never die and we should never, the worst case scenario is someone dying, you know? I just think we need to try to somehow, I think through education, just through talking about it over the years, hopefully it'll change. But like, I think that will also help change the way we view hospice. Because to me, and I don't mean to, I think when I say this, it sounds cliche, but to me, hospice is about living. And I really mean that. Even though it sounds like something nice someone says, so you don't fear hospice anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
Even if that does, that's nice.
Yeah. Hospice is about living to help people like not fear it. But I really mean that because everyone has a death journey. Some people might be hit by buses. I mean, that's graphic, but I always say that. You know, you might be hit by a bus, or you might die quickly from a cardiac arrest, or you might die from a chronic illness or some kind of cancer that eventually, slowly, you die from. And so everyone has their own death journey. And if you're on a journey where you kind of see it coming, and so like that means you have a chance to go on a program like hospice that can help you live out the rest of your life. And the way it helps you is by really managing some symptoms that I feel like most doctors and agencies wouldn't be totally comfortable because of the fact of like, they, you know, prescribing too much pain medicine, or, you know, it's just a little more lax so we can actually get symptoms managed so you can live your life. It's a program to help you not be in and out of hospitals, not be in and out of urgent cares, in and out of doctors' offices and appointments. They come to you. They manage symptoms so you can live out the rest of your life.
Absolutely.
So it's about living.
Live with, the time that you have left, that reminded me so much. I think it's by the quote by a gentleman called, I'm potentially going to butcher the name, Atul Gawande. And apologies if you've ever listened to this podcast. It was something like, and I heard this quote when I was on my death doula training about 2 years ago, and it went along the lines of, you know, you are alive until your last breath. How can I help you to live? And it's so true. Like, that really flipped the script for me of, okay, yes, this person is dying, but until they take that last breath, they're still alive. So what are we going to do to make them most comfortable, enjoy this time that they've got left with themselves and with their loved ones? We're not going to stop assisting this person and providing for them in whatever capacity that looks like until their last breath. And I love that outlook, a kind of that. I think that was a real pinnacle point of me changing the way I looked at hospice and palliative care of it's not just as soon as you're admitted, like it's just, I'll throw in the towel, put them in a corner and just let them die out. Like it's not the case at all.
And if people got on hospice sooner, yes, they actually, because I think a lot of times they wait, including, and I don't ever want to seem like I'm like throwing like oncologists under the bus or, but I do think because we have this, no one should die ever, so let's do all these things to make sure they don't, right? They get on hospice too late. And I wish I could like quote the study, but there has been studies done that have shown that people who have the same diagnosis live longer on hospice. It's like live up to 30 days longer than someone who doesn't do hospice with the same diagnosis. Now, someone listening who's not used to being in this death and dying arena might be like, 30 days? What's 30 yes. days? You yeah. know?
But 30.
But also, it's yeah. 30 days, yeah. you know? And people think hospice is a death sentence, you know?
Literally, that was me. Hospice is a death. That's me. Hospice was a death sentence. And actually, when you're kind of on your own death sentence anyway, yeah, that 30 days, we'll think, oh, yeah, well, it's not 5 more years where you can do, you're like 30 days when you're dying and for your loved ones who are around you and just want that extra bit of time with you. And if that can be pain managed, like not 30 days of pure pain, additional pain for you,
right?
Exactly,
right. No, we do things like high dose steroids and high dose things that, like, I guess if you weren't dying, you know, it probably wouldn't be the best thing for you, right? But also, well, like, how can we, like, we're going to do what we can to make your life better in the moment. So it's just, there's like a fine line, right? And we're just really good at managing symptoms on hospice, you know? So if we can, and most people, so many people come on hospice and feel better for a long time because they were feeling so bad for so long. You know, they stopped the treatments, they stopped getting chemo and radiation, which usually causes symptoms, not always, but usually, and we get their symptoms managed and they feel good for time, you know?
What a gift. And obviously, Julie, throughout your whole career, you have been and bear witness to many people's deaths. Is there any that have really stayed with you? And I mean, I'm sure that it's almost, it's not to say like, what's been your favorite death? I find that yeah. really peculiar. But what's one that's been, when I interviewed Catherine Mannix, Dr. Catherine Mannix about it, in one of her books, her book was basically a memoir about like some really poignant case studies that she'd, and people she'd looked after in the final weeks and days of their lives. And there was one in particular, a lady called Holly. And as soon as I said her name, I could see her face and it just transported her back to about 25 years ago. And she was like, wow, she went, Holly, like, wow. And it took her back completely. And I just wanted to ask you, is there any that have kind of stuck out with you for any particular reason?
Yeah, there's definitely patients, like patient specific in the ICU. So there's some in the ICU. The one I'll talk about now. There's a bunch I could talk about. There are definitely patients that I can mean so much to me and have like changed the course of my life. So there's deaths in the ICU that have changed the course of my life because I advocated for them. Without them even knowing, right? They're intubated and sedated and all the things. And I advocated for us to really talk to the family about what's happening with this person, right? And I feel like it changed the course of their life. It changed the course of the family's life. And it changed the course of my life because I started seeing that I had a voice in this and I could advocate for people in ways that you don't think are advocating, right? You don't learn that like advocating for someone's death is advocating, but it was like, enough is enough. We're hurting this person. What are we doing here? You know, this is suffering. But anyway, so those people have changed my life. But one that always sticks out to me is a Spanish speaking family that I had to use a translator with for months and months. And they were young. So the patient was young. His wife was young. They had young children. And he was really We did a good job at managing his symptoms, but he was really debilitated by the time I got there. So he wasn't like up and walking around and doing his thing. But we were keeping him comfortable. But I got really close with him, but I really got close with his wife. And it was wild to get so close to somebody through a translator, you know, and I would forget that I'm using different translator every time over the phone. And I would leave the house and I would say like, thank you to the translator. And you could hear like a deep sigh because I forget this translator isn't, you know, they're translating all of this hospice and death and dying stuff that I'm talking about and so much emotions. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't even think about what you're going through too. Yeah. This like each translator, I'm always like, oh my gosh, thank you so much. You know, cause you can hear their voice like, wow, what the hell just happened there? But I remember his death because it was so sad, but it was so beautiful because the love that was there and his parents were there and his children were there and she was there and she was like laying on his chest when he took his last breath. And that stuff is sad. It is sad. I understand that. And, but it's also like the most love you can witness. Like the fact that I get to like witness how much love is in that family and how sad and devastated they are, but they don't leave. You know, that they feel it and they're sad and they support each other. Because I've seen it other ways too, where like, you're so sad, you leave, or you're so sad, you shut down, or you're so sad, you don't do anything. Right. So to see that is like, I'll never forget it. It's breathtaking. And it's, to me, like what life is all about and how death can feel so sacred and so beautiful. And, it's just moments like that, that are like, well, oh, forever in my brain.
Hello, I'm Amber, your host of the Grief Gang podcast, who is already in your ear holes as you are hearing this ad because you are listening to a Grief Gang podcast episode.
And I'm Poppy, the creator behind The Grief Case and previous Grief Gang guest a fair few times.
We won't interrupt you for long, but we just wanted to tell you about our Patreon community, Unpacking Grief.
Unpacking Grief is an intimate and exclusive community where we're quite literally unpacking grief. Through Patreon-only workshops, book clubs, live Q&As with faces and names in the grief space you know and love, we're getting through this grief stuff together.
Join today and become a part of our wonderful and supportive community. Become a member and pay nothing, and we mean nothing, until the first of that month. Try before you buy. If you hate us, you can leave with no hidden fees.
Joining details in the show notes.
Bye!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I love what you're saying then about the translator, kind of even having the barrier of language between you. You know, you're just humans looking at other humans and bearing witness to that. This is a painful experience for us all. We've spent a lot of time together and we've got to know one another, and this is really going to hurt. And yeah, how it is, it's so strange when you can, when you know, you've witnessed or you've been told of people having beautiful deaths and a good death, and some people just can't wrap their head around that. They think, again, how can death be good? That is the end, that is the final bookend. It's not meant to be good. It's, you know, especially in the UK, kind of like how we look at a bit like mourning and kind of the time, it's literally don't talk about it is something we're just it, almost like they feel like it's glorifying it, and that if we talk about it, it brings it on, and it's just gonna, the Grim Reaper's gonna come knocking at our door. But actually, when we do, when we treat death like that, it's a real disservice, and to the people that we're looking after, and whoever, you know, if you are working in this field, or you know, somebody that you love and you're being a carer, by kind of not even being open to the idea that this could be, this could end beautifully and it could end peacefully.
Yes. And like, I was, as you were talking, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I just think about how it's like, you're kind of taught to like not show emotions. If someone's sad, make them not sad. If someone's crying, get them to not cry, you know? And I think we just need to stop doing that.
Like, we need to, like, stop it now.
We just need to stop doing that. Like, it's sad, so let's all just be sad. It's sad, so let's let someone cry, and not try to make them feel better. I mean, so often my work is like, I don't do anything except for sit there and like allow someone to just have emotions and not try to stop it. And at first it can feel awkward, you know, at first, because we're so trained to be like, here's a tissue, or no, it's okay. Oh, no, you know, and I force myself just to sit there. And usually the longer I sit there, the more comes.
Of course. Yeah, exactly. That barrier just goes down. And I can imagine as well, that might have been a really hard transition for you. As you said, like, you went from ICU of kind of fix, keep people alive, keep their heart pumping. And then to go from, that's again, Catherine, because it was so just mind-blowing, but of that transition of, when you're trained as a doctor, as a nurse, you are trained to save lives. And then when you're then like almost retraining to go, you're saving, you're sustaining a life. There's nothing more you can do here. I like, does it feel like it almost goes against like everything of your training and everything in medical school that you learn of kind of, but then as well, just the learning of, I feel like as human beings, we're so, whether you're a doctor or a nurse, anything, I think if you're not a sociopath, or you are a sociopath or a psychopath, you kind of are intrinsically wired. If you see someone you love and care for in pain, emotional pain, you want to fix that. You want to put an end to that. Why would you want to see someone you love in so much pain, crying their eyes out, like literally nearly being sick, they're so upset? Why would you not want to stop that? But then actually coming to the knowledge that putting a stopper on that has not helping, but you know, it could do some people, it's all relative here, but of letting the emotions just be. This is a really heartbreaking thing that has happened to somebody in their life. Whatever is washing over them just needs to pass through. It needs to come by and pass through.
I think too, people seeing, when they see that you're okay with it too, like, I think, you know, people want to take care of the other person, you know, like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to, like, when they meet someone, and probably it helps that I'm not their relative, right? I'm not someone close with them, that I'm like this quote unquote, like, professional. I think that's funny, but that like seems to be comfortable with the fact that they have these emotions, can help too. And that just takes time too. That takes time. It took time for me just to be like, oh, I just need to.
It's sometimes like you have to tell yourself, you're like, I remember I was like, just told myself just to keep your mouth shut. Just keep your mouth shut. Yep. As much as it, when you want to go like, oh, but, and come up with the platitudes, I was just like, just zip it, babe. That's the best thing you can do. I wanted to ask you, what are some things about like the process of dying that may comfort those that are witnessing somebody they love die? Like, for somebody who, I know here on Grief Gang, although we are, it's almost like I'm on the other side and appealing to people who have passed through the death of their loved one. I know I definitely have listeners who have come and found the podcast and the online community before their person has died, and are kind of almost just trying to read up, listen up, just on kind of how to prepare themselves. I mean, as we know, we can read all the books and listen to the podcast, but nothing will ever kind of truly prepare us for that day in our lives. But what are potentially some things that could bring some comfort to people? For example, I'm thinking of a few of like your TikToks that I love, and when you've spoken about when people have seen their loved ones have come into the room and they're like, my mum's here, and for the family they're like, oh my God, it's happening now. They're dying right now and they're going into the light and they're leaving us, and panic ensues. But actually knowing in that moment that that person's having a really lovely moment, where this is again all relative, whatever you may believe or may not believe, but actually, you know, does it mean they are going into the light, or that they're just in a really nice place of comfort? And how comforting to know that their deceased mum or relative has now come to visit them in their final hours. So some things like that, what are some things that could bring somebody comfort when the person is dying?
There are this is what I've learned, right? In the first year and a half of me being a hospice nurse, I remember being blown away by the bodies. So I have a bunch of things. Some seem a little more mystical. Some are like biological that are to me amazing. So because like you said, I was an ICU nurse trying to keep people alive. And what I saw in hospice over the, you know, year or so of being a new hospice nurse, where I was seeing death and not doing interventions, that was the most amazing year of my life. And it helped me not be so afraid to die, because our bodies are built to do it. And our bodies really do take care of us, in the sense of they make you not hungry. Your body makes you not hungry. Your body makes you not thirsty. Your body makes you tired, right? So you might not have like the same energy you used to have, right? But your body is literally preparing you. So the more you can accept that and not resist it, family members too, because family members want to be like, they're not eating if they don't eat. Da, 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 da. Like they want you to eat. They want you to drink. You should get up. You should go for a walk. And I get it. But what I see is that if you just let yourself be and listen to your body, it's a very natural, peaceful process. For the most part, I'm generally speaking, there are different diseases, different things, right? But also in seeing how people die with specific diseases, as healthcare workers who work in hospice, we do know the main symptoms. We do know the things to expect. Like that book, What to Expect When Expecting. I always think like What to Expect When Expiring, yeah. Which is awful. But like really, I feel like we can take
the book title that was right there.
All right. Everyone is different, but like we can kind of see, we kind of know how it's going to go. So that to me is comforting anyway, because I want to know shit. I want to know, right? Tell me what to expect. And yes, there's nuance and it's not black and white, but we can tell you some things that can just make you feel less anxious about what the heck is going to happen to me. You know, you're going to eat less, you're going to sleep more, you're not going to drink, and your body is going to make you do that. And it's not going to hurt. So that's one. Two, most people do have visioning. And visioning is what you were talking about, where you see dead relatives, dead loved ones, pets. It's not, I say relatives, but some people don't like their relatives. So it's not people you don't like. It's like, it's always a comforting thing. It's like, it could be an angel. It can be God. It's usually relatives. It's usually people that you've loved, and they come to you either in dreams or you visually see them. And usually, like you said, they're not on their deathbed. It's usually like a few weeks to a month before they die. So that actually is something hospice workers use as kind of a guide. Yeah. And the more I witness death, the more I'm like, wow, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. And that like natural death, our bodies really, you know, like things happen where, you know, you're not eating and drinking. So eventually your body will go into ketosis, and ketosis is like a natural numbing. Like it decreases pain. It increases euphoria. Your calcium levels go up, so you sleep a lot. Like there's just things that biologically happen, just like in childbirth, where like your hips get wider and things happen so you can birth this baby, right? It's like that with death.
Yeah. I've just, as you were saying, and talking about how we're made to die, quite literally, but of how, oh yes, we're like, for women, you know, we're made to do this, and kind of bodies, hopefully our hips widen, but even for like the baby itself, and like baby knows how to push through the canal. I've not had a child, so I have no idea what I'm talking about.
Me neither. I don't know. This is what people tell me.
I've not the faintest idea, but I've heard they get ready to like push their little selves out, and they know what they're doing before they've even stepped out into the world. So it's
before they even have consciousness or whatever it is, right?
Yeah, they know to tuck down and push through that pelvic floor and get out of there and get out of town. And so, like, we know how to, in birth and in death, we are made if we just listen, if we don't put in all these things in the way to stop it and to confuse the natural process of dying. And it is, though, for the fact, as you said, so there with the families of, well, if they're not eating, they're not gonna have enough energy, and then that kind of feeds back in, well,
you know, and then they're gonna die. I think that's the fear, and then they're gonna die, and you're like, yes,
they
you
are.
Know, like
they are.
Yes, yes, and so are you. That's why I want to change the way we look at, like, it's not, it's like we don't just think about death when we're in hospice. Like, to me, I feel like we need to understand in a general way that we're going to die, me and you and all of us, right? So this idea of, like, what if they don't, because that's what it usually is. They're not going to eat. If they don't eat, they don't have energy. If they don't have energy, they're going to die, you know? And you're like, mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's kind of the end result.
Yes. And the whole point is that we're allowing the body to allow the body to die naturally.
Yeah.
Because the more we do that, the better it usually goes.
Yeah. Don't interfere with it. Absolutely. I want to move on to kind of in a bit of way thinking about anybody who's potentially listening, who's thinking about potentially a career in hospice care and palliative care and what that's like. How, two questions in one, how can one ensure that they are taking care of themselves and, like, stepping in and thinking about this career? And directly, how do you look after you, Julie? Like, how do you look after the grief that you might feel for all the families and the people that you've cared for? And how do you hold, from someone who, like me, who has an online community, like, I'm like, I need to look after me, let alone someone who is bearing witness to multiple, as much as they can be, beautiful endings, really hard and emotionally taxing things. How do you look after you?
Girl, we can do a whole nother podcast on this. I always think about how, am I going to start a whole nother TikTok about this? Because I have a boatload to say.
That's a good bronze.
There is, so this is another passion of mine. Like, I always think if you have something to say, say it. So, like, I have something to say about death and dying. I have something to say about nursing and boundaries and how to take care of yourself or anyone in kind of like a helping field. Right. So there is, so this is me personally. And I realize it's a privilege and not everyone can do this. So I still would encourage everyone who thinks they can't to think about thinking differently. So I don't work full-time as a nurse. And it's not because of social media. I was not working full-time as a nurse pre-social media. So how I do it, and that has helped me. Like, I think full-time, I still work basically full-time, but I work per diem, which allows me to make my own schedule, come, like, work 40 or 50 hours a week if I want to work overtime, and then work 32 hours a week, and then work 24, and then work 48. Like, I can take more vacation. There's, like, pluses and minuses. I have to buy my own insurance. I have to plan for my future on my own. And people think I can't do that because they're so used to not doing that. But I will tell you, it is the best. And I was scared to do it. I wasn't making money on social media. Not that I'm really making money on social media now, but, like, it wasn't like I had some other revenue. I didn't.
Yeah. Or thinking I just was about, like, yeah, another path. Yeah.
No, I wasn't thinking about anything. I was just like, I know what I need to make myself okay. And this is what I need. And not everyone needs that, but that's one thing I do. So I feel like because I have this come and go-ness of it, it's easier for me. And it feels like I have a little more control over my life and over my schedule, whether I do or not, I don't know, but that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
And I have really good boundaries, really, really good boundaries. And I think for a lot of people, they would think it makes you not a good nurse or not a good team player. That's another thing a bunch of administration people will tell you. You know, we need you to do this late admission because no one else can do it. No.
Yeah, I'm not gonna do it.
I can't. But if you don't do it, so and so has to do it. No, they don't. They can say no too. Do you know what I mean? Like, the on-call nurse can do it. Like, we can say no. At least now I would say some organizations would say, no, you can't. Like some people, some nurses listening would be like, no, I can't. Then leave that organization because, if you can, because, I do work in California, so it's like known for good nursing. So, I'm unionized. There's things like we're in a union, but I would say you need to make your life so, and saying no is really hard. Even now I'm like boundary queen and I still know that I'm sure people I work with administration, some families might not think I think when I'm there, I'm there and I'm in it and I'm good and I do a great job. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. But I know that, boundaries, people don't like people who have boundaries, not everyone, you know what I mean? And I do, I don't ever give people my patients, my cell phone number. I don't work after I am supposed to be off. I say no all the time to administration, all the time. I say no to other nurses. Like that's hard. And you and people, and you can get some slack. But what I've noticed is once they see you still show up in other ways, because I do, when I'm there, I really show up and I really do help. It inspires other people to have boundaries.
No, it is absolutely with boundaries. It's and especially in the work that you do, it's kind of because it can feel like life and death. But then again, reverting back to kind of, well, oh, they'll die. It's like, yeah, that's again the point, but like not leaving someone just to die on their own. But the worst case scenario, the thinking is, well, if this doesn't get done, then the worst is going to happen. It's like, this is the work, that the field that we work in, and kind of in order for you to be the best that you can be as a nurse and to not burn out and to be when you are present at your best capability, you have to have these boundaries.
Yes. And I cannot take on an administration that is understaffed. Like that's, and I think that's what I mean. Like I'm saying that at a risk of, I know I sound like a dick, right? Like, or people can say like, well, that's not, I don't know if I can talk like this. Can I talk like this on this podcast? Oh, right. Like,
absolutely.
Okay. Like, it's like and I know then people will say, well, the patient suffers. Okay. So again, I'm not at all trying to make a patient suffer, but I know that my life and my boundary and my being is important too.
Exactly.
And this place I'm working needs to figure that out because I can't fix it all. And if I think I can, that's a issue that I need to deal with internally, because it's not every problem is my problem to fix, you know? And I have to trust that my other colleagues can help, that the nurse on call can help, that the administration is going to figure it out, because I can't do it. And I had to cut it off. And so, and then there's every once in a while, like I won't do that. And I will cross my own boundaries for whatever reason. I just talked to the family on the phone and they called back and I'm not supposed to work, but like, you know, like sometimes I'll cross it because I want to.
But that's your choice. Yes, your choice. Cross your own boundary, and that's okay. We all have to push if we want to push our own boundary within remit, but when externally it's being that boundary being constantly pushed against, you will eventually go, oh, fuck this, I'm walking. And that's what we see, especially here in the UK. We're seeing here.
You have compassion fatigue.
Yeah.
Compassion fatigue. Oh, then me in the ICU, I was on, because in the ICU where I worked in on the East Coast, we weren't unionized. We weren't like allowed to have boundaries. We weren't allowed to say no.
No.
And I couldn't work like that.
You.
Yes. I couldn't work like that. So if you're in a place that, what I'm saying is, I guess if there's some people who are in a place that is like that, I would honestly reconsider working somewhere else, doing something else. Like it's not, because that's the only way. This is a long-winded. That is how I stay sane. That is how I do it. I have boundaries, and I like love and do my work when I'm doing it, and I don't when I don't. And there's a clear boundary.
Brilliant. No, that's a really, really.
And that's really hard to do, but I had to do it. Otherwise, I couldn't do it.
Yeah, and I think potentially for some people listening and thinking that maybe like, they might not have even known that could have been an option, thinking like they just, oh no, I've trained to be a nurse, so of course my full-time job is going to be a nurse, like da da da. But actually thinking, no, it doesn't have to be. You can still enjoy being a nurse in the work that you do, but it doesn't have to be your every single day, especially working in dying, in death and dying. Like when you're living and working in death and dying, it becomes a lot of what you consume, and kind of when are then the moments that you need to live. But to wrap up, Jude, I'd love to ask you kind of just to conclude all of this, and with all of your TikToks and further educating like the world, it's just your TikToks are amazing and it's been so wonderful just to see it go so far and reach so many people and educate quite literally the world. What does good end of life practice look like to you? What are the key components to that? What does a world with good death and dying education look like?
Oh my gosh, that's such a great question. I think it starts with the world accepting and acknowledging that death is inevitable. So like the whole, that's like a big thing, right? But like, I think that will change everything, right? So it's this idea that we can accept, including me, that I am going to die one day. And if I see it coming, because I happen to have a disease where I know that it is, to ask for help, be able to accept help, people to help, right? So like using all of the things, like I always say, end of life is kind of like all hands on deck. You know, you need, if you have family that can help you, family, hospice support, community support, you know, getting help and allowing people to help you. So this idea of like knowing and accepting and acknowledging that this is happening, asking for help, getting help, accepting help, and then allowing your body to be the guide, really listening to your body, not resisting death, which is hard. I mean, that's, I don't know if I can, we're human too, you know? So it's like, it's going to come and go and be messy and not messy, and kind of accept all of that too. Like knowing that it's just hard sometimes, and being in it, right? Emotions are hard. Like I always say, if I get diagnosed with something terminal tomorrow, just because I'm here talking about death and dying doesn't mean I'm not going to be human and have sadness and anger and fear, and then acceptance, then back and forth, just kind of accepting all of that. It's all about acceptance, I think. That's where it starts. And then we go from there.
We start from there. Wonderful way to end. Julie, thank you so much for joining me today on the Grief Gang podcast. It's been an absolute delight. And I know the listeners will have taken away so much from that. So thank you.
Thank you. This has been great.
Thanks for tuning in this week. I truly appreciate every single person who listens to the show. By doing so, you're actually helping more people find the show and in turn support themselves. You can keep up to date and become part of the Grief Gang community by following us on social media platforms such as Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and TikTok. Check out our website and blog too, and if you fancy, you can sign up to our newsletter where you will receive regular emails and first to knows on events and workshops. All links for the above are in the episode footnotes. Big love, look after yourself, and I will see you next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.